What's going on, everybody? This is John Albatross. It's been a while. Going through some things right now. I'm trying to purchase a house. I just got a lot on my plate right now, so that's why I haven't been recording. But I'm back. And today I am going to talk about music. Primarily music from the late 90s, early 2000s. So, before I do that, I just want to talk about, I did get a lot of stuff. I got this new microphone I've been using to help me. It's going to sound a lot better. It might pick up on some stuff too, but, it's me scratching my leg. I'm a little bit further away now. But the reason I'm doing this is because I recently watched a documentary on HBO about Woodstock 99. And the documentary was about Woodstock 99, but it really pissed me off. It pissed me off to the point where it was like, the super woke are just like, I don't even know how to explain it anymore, honestly. Like, I just watched it, and so the whole thing was just terrible. They were blaming everything but the root cause itself of why it was such a mess, why it was such a shit show. Oh, it was a shit show because of all this. The answers were right there in front of you. And another one, I watched a recent documentary on Hulu, which was actually pretty good, called The Curse of Von Dutch. I know you all remember Von Dutch with those trucker hats that were like, oh man, I'm going to cop one of them. And they were like $90, and you're like, oh fuck, I'm not copping one of them. But somebody told me to watch it because I got a Von Dutch flannel. I got it on Groupon for $15. It's a very premium thing. The only thing that sucks about it is it says fucking Von Dutch really big on the back. But, yeah, definitely check that out, man. That's, the story behind that was fucking crazy. And the whole thing is the curse of Von Dutch was Von Dutch fucking said, hey, everybody should be able to use my stuff. I'm not copyrighting anything. You know, the copyrights, it was just like some really cool thing. And then somebody copyrighted it and everything went to shit. It was definitely worth a watch. 100%. So, the main story tonight is a... God damn it. Somebody hit me up. Fucking medium. Bullshit. So the main story tonight was Woodstock 99. Now, my sister went to Woodstock 99, and she told me the problems with it. She was, about to be 20 years old and 22 years old when she went. She was 21. Just about. She was about to turn 21. Yeah, she was going to turn 21. So she was a month away from being 21 years old, and she told me about it. And so the whole movie was basically a fuck you to everybody. Like, oh, the fucking Limp Bizkit was there. Limp Bizkit was a fucking... They shouldn't have been there. It was not about what Woodstock was about. So, mind you, at the time, Limp Bizkit was arguably one of the most popular bands in the world. They were coming off of a great selling album in $3 Bill, y'all, and they were just about to release Significant Other, which was put them to the fucking stratosphere. Korn was there. Korn was just coming off of that big run with Life is Peachy and Follow the Leader, came out a year prior, and that was doing good. And Kid Rock was also there, I know. Everybody with Kid Rock, they're like, Oh, fucking Kid Rock, who cares? Kid Rock at that point sold 5 million records, or was about to sell 5 million records. So he was a big deal. They had all the heavies there. Metallica was there. The fucking Chili Peppers were making their comeback thing, I think, in my opinion, was the fall of the career of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And then it had some classic groups like Santana was there. I mean, it had a very good lineup for the time. But here's where the problems were coming in. Now, mind you, if you know anything about this, it was 100 degrees all 3 days. And you could not, it was in an old Air Force base in Rome, New York, like close to Utica. So you were basically in like, almost like a fucking rock and roll internment camp, I would say, which they never pointed out. And they had the fans there, and they had the artists, like, who was it? The Offspring was also there. The Offspring and Korn were there, Jonathan Davis from Korn. Like, when the girls were crowd surfing, like, they were getting groped and stuff. And it's just like, yeah, you guys, you gotta fucking stop groping the fucking girls. Say if that was your sister, your mother, or anything like that. Like, come on, guys, be a little more civil. They even agreed about that. But the whole fucking show was just this woke fucking, I think that Woodstock 99 was the epitome of where everything went wrong in the music. And once Kurt Cobain died, grunge was like, you know, I say this all the time, I'm a big fan of grunge music. One of my favorite bands is the Alice in Chains. I liked Stone Temple Pilots. I liked Pearl Jam's first album was good. Who else was there that was good? Soundgarden was good. And grunge didn't really have the staying power that people thought. And I tell people this all the time. One of the main drivers of why grunge was popular, and I'm not trying to sound like an asshole and take anything away from these guys, because they all fucking sold a lot of albums. But, like, Nirvana's Nevermind, everybody's saying that, oh, it was one of the greatest selling, it sold over 10 million albums. Okay, let's take that in the perspective. Alice in Chains' Dirt, I love the album, one of my favorite albums, sold about 4 million copies. Like, Alice in Chains is not playing these mega venues after selling 400 or 4 million copies. And they never really did. Like, they played big venues, and they played nice-sized venues. They played, like, 6,000-seat venues. Maybe, like, small arenas or something. They had, like, a mini arena tour. Nothing spectacular. And there's a reason for that. Everybody, oh, the fucking concert tickets. And I'm like, no, no. So there's a lot of problems with concerts. And we'll go back to Woodstock 99, too. But grunge, they were talking about when Kurt Cobain died. People give Kurt Cobain too much credit. Kurt Cobain did not cause nu metal. Nu metal was bound to happen. Oh, look at how progressive grunge was to people. I was like, it was a little more, but it wasn't like, I don't really know. Like, Pete, there's so many conspiracies. But my thing is with grunge, too, is so Nirvana, they sold 10 million for Nevermind. In Utero was a good album too. Very, like, I didn't really listen to it till I was older, but it was a good album. Like, it was definitely worth a listen. It had some jams on it. That didn't sell nearly as well as Nevermind, which I thought In Utero was probably a superior album. And at one point they reissued Bleach, and that went gold, sold 500,000 albums, which is impressive for. But a lot of them were posthumous after Kurt Cobain died. Posthumous sales. But those numbers were juked for all those bands. Like, all those bands, none of those bands were super seriously that popular. You gotta remember, and a lot of people don't, especially the younger ones, that there were two major formats at the time. People were still buying cassettes like the assload because cassettes were great. They can listen to it in their home. They can listen to it in their car because every car pretty much had a cassette player in it. But around 1991, it started to change. Like CD players were starting to become affordable. Because you got to remember, CD players were expensive. They were like in the 80s, late 80s. For like the home CD deck, they were like $500. And in the 80s, that was like two paychecks for a lot of people, getting paid well too. Like that was really expensive. And a lot of people didn't have CD players. And yeah, a lot of people don't remember. I kind of remember. Like I was still like, I was a kid. I was like 7 years old when my sister got her first CD player. It was like a little CD boombox, and those things weren't cheap, let me tell you. I got one in 93. I was happy as a pig in shit. I was 9 years old. It's like, dude, I got a CD player. Awesome. Then the next year, like, they became really cheap. My buddy's parents, and he got a CD player. He was happy. I'm like, yeah! So we could swap CDs now, and we were getting CDs, and they had, like, the tape players on them, too, so... This was a game changer too. You can record the CD onto the tape. And that was great for... Like that's really what... Like 90, I'd say about 1996, maybe 97, CD players started to become the primary format for people to listen to music. But before that, people were buying tapes and then they got a CD player. And they're like, hey, you know what? I'm going to buy the CD of it. Once they got the CD players, they just got the blank tapes and they made the fucking blank tapes. They recorded the CD onto the blank tape. They could bring it into their car. It was a lot cheaper. And then also, you can get like 60 minutes on the side. So you could probably get a whole album on a fucking cassette. One side, you could put two albums on a cassette. It was great. But at that time, people were still buying tapes, and then they were like, once they got their CD players, they were buying the CDs, but not everybody had CD players yet. And once they got the CD players, like I said, when I was 9 years old, I got my first, it was an RCA boombox, and my first albums were Weird Al Yankovic, Alapalooza. Yeah, fuck you, it was a good album, fucking... If you don't like Weird Al, there's something wrong with you. He's just too goddamn entertaining. And then I got Alice in Chains Jar of Flies for Easter. And then I got Tori Amos single for the song God. And me and my sister ran the CD scam for the BMG Music Club. The Goldbergs did an episode, and I was like this to my sister. I was like, did you watch the Goldbergs? It's like, yeah. Oh, my God. They actually paid them back. Like, I got so many CDs, and it was so funny. My sister signed me up so she can get, like, the 9 CDs for a penny deal. So we split it. I got 4 CDs. She got 4 or 5. And then they kept sending me CDs that I didn't want. Like, they sent me the fucking Georgia Satellite's Greatest Hits. They had that song, Keep Your Hands to Yourself. It was horrible. And then they sent me fucking Whitesnake's Greatest Hits. It's just like, dude, I was buying grunge and fucking metal albums. And they gave me Whitesnake's Greatest Hits. Then my mom called up and said, yeah, you know, you were selling CDs to a 10-year-old. My 17-year-old daughter was doing a scam. And they were like, oh, well, tell you what. Your son can keep the CDs, no problem, but your daughter has to pay us back. And we did this for like 2 years. It was funny as hell. My sister, she was paying them, but Christ, I don't even know how many CDs. I think I got maybe like 25. By the time I was 11 years old, I had like 25 CDs that I didn't pay for. It was funny. And it's been over 20 years, so... And I don't even think BMG Music Club's around still. And there was like a whole bunch of people with the scams with it. Dude, they gave away so many fucking CDs, it's not even funny. But yeah, so you were getting tapes, you were getting CDs. Like, I found places that were going out of business, and like music stores, they were selling the tapes. Like, I had $10 in my pocket. They would let me buy 5 cassette tapes. And then later on, I would just get them in CDs, and I would, you know, hey, here's the cassette tapes. I got the cassette tapes because they were awesome, and they were cheap. And then when you couldn't afford the CDs, you just went with the cassette tapes because you had that option. So that's a big reason why the sales are juked on all those things from that time, from like 1989 to about 97. I think all the sales to totals for albums sold are very, very juked. Still impressive. Still very impressive. Nirvana still sold a lot of albums. Alice in Chains still sold a lot of albums. Pearl Jam's 10 still sold a lot of albums. It's nothing to shake a stick at, but at that time, like, I tell people this and it gets them pissed off. Grunge wasn't as it was popular, but it wasn't as popular as you thought. And that's really why it didn't fucking catch fire and last into the, you know, the new millennium. And nu metal took over. And nu metal had a really good run. Nu metal was big until like 7 years, for 7 years. And then after that, that whole hardcore metalcore shit, which I always said, like, a lot of the bands were Christian rock bands, and I always, nothing wrong with being a Christian rock band, but there was, like, a lot of the people I knew who were really hardcore into that are, like, super, super conservative and, like, cringeworthy conservative now, and I think they indoctrinated a lot of the millennials, and it just wasn't good. It was niche to begin with, and it just wasn't going to last. And that lasted a good 4 years. But anyway, let's get back to Woodstock 99. I know I went on a tangent there for like 10 minutes, but I had to. I've been talking about music, these things with people all for the past like 3 weeks. Woodstock 99, my sister said, was a shit show. Like, they were like, oh yeah, look at this, look at this. And they even showed you the conditions they were in. Like I said, I compared it. If I had to like describe it as something, I described it as rock and roll internment camp, like a Japanese internment camp. Wouldn't go as far as saying it was a concentration camp, but yeah, it was at least an internment camp. It was fucking terrible. They had a... like, the porta-potties were there. They weren't fucking empty in the porta-potties. You walked in there. They were like, okay, here's your tent. Like, you brought a tent in. You can only bring certain types of tents in. They would take your tent if you didn't do anything. If it had, like, stuff that you can use as weapons and all that. Which was fucking bullshit. And it was just on a fucking... an Air Force base, which was like a fortress almost, and you couldn't leave. There was nowhere you could go. Like festivals today, like I went to Austin City Limits and South by Southwest down in Austin. You could leave for the night. Once the music stopped, you went home for the night, and you could go sleep in a hotel. You could go sleep at your buddy's house. If you lived down there, you could have went home and went to sleep. It was a good idea. You could shower at least too. It's like, oh man, just took a nice shower after you've been roasting in the sun and fucking God forbid it rained and all that. You can go home and take a nice shower. It felt great. Now Woodstock 99, they had a bunch of porta potties there that they didn't empty, and everything, like, my sister went in there, everything was fucking for sale. Like, there was nothing. They hardly provided fucking fresh water. If you wanted fresh water, you had to buy fresh water, which was $4, which was ridiculous in 1999. Beer was cheaper than water, which was another problem too, because you had a lot of fucking rowdy assholes that were drunk in 100 degree weather, and then they were getting fucking, you know, heat stroke and just dehydrated, because beer dehydrates the shit out of you. And they had showers there. Like, people were just like, I'm not going to the showers. Dude, you were, like, shin deep in, like, people's filth water, like, from them, because the showers were horrible. And then you had the women's shower and you had the men's shower. It was just a makeshift shower. It was like, dude, you lived on, there was an Air Force base. You guys couldn't have did anything for those showers? Come on. Like, if this was, like, honestly, they were showing the things, the conditions they had. These conditions would fucking have violated the Geneva Convention. That's how bad they were in there. But the whole time, they were just like, DMX came out, and DMX at the time, he just came off of two mega-selling albums. They both went, like, double platinum, if I'm not mistaken. And DMX had Marilyn Manson on the one album, so it was like a nice crossover album for him. Oh, man, DMX is working with Marilyn Manson. Oh, Christ, that's going to sell a lot of records. And it did. And he was out there, he's singing a song, and he got the whole fucking crowd, which was mostly white people, like, white. They were using the N-word, and then this guy was like, how do you think DMX felt when he had about 500,000 white people saying the N-word, singing his songs? And I can tell you right now how DMX felt. DMX got that crowd hyped up. It was the first day. People came to see DMX. That's his song. He was a showman. He got the crowd hyped up. They were singing his song. I don't think he cared that they were saying the N. I think DMX was there at Woodstock 99 saying, you all get a free N-word pass today as long as you're singing my song. Almost positive that's what DMX was thinking. I don't think deep down DMX had some fucking, man, I regret singing that song at Woodstock 99. No, it was one of his most popular songs. He's gonna have to sing it because the crowd's going to expect him to sing it. And then the night ended, I believed, with Korn. And Korn's pit was fucking crazy. There was a lot of people. It was just all the humanity in that thing jumping around. It was nuts. And then the next day it was Limp Bizkit. It was Kid Rock and Limp Bizkit. Kid Rock played at the Boiling Point, and Kid Rock had all these, like, fucking people throw trash in the air, because that's, oh, and Kid Rock was just saying all this misogynistic stuff. It was Kid Rock. I'm not trying to say it was acceptable at the time, but that was, oh, and there was only three female acts on there: Sheryl Crow, Jewel, and Alanis Morissette. They shouldn't have been on that show. And they were just like, people were like, oh, nobody really cared. And Alanis Morissette and, like, Jewel were like, yeah, you know, it was weird that we were on there. They offered us money, but not for nothing. You need acts like that on a show with that much energy. You need that, like, little downtime thing. And people still liked them. People still saw them live, and they still cheered them, and they were still doing whatever. It was like a thing for generations. They were both popular at the time. Dave Matthews Band was there. They were popular at the time. People were singing Dave Matthews. Dave Matthews was like, yeah, maybe with, like, that lineup. It's like, nah, dude, you were a popular band. They put the most popular bands on there. They booked a big show with popular bands. You should have been on the show, Dave. The biggest pussy was Moby. They had a thing. Moby was in there. They had a rave all night. So after the music stopped, they had the rave that you could keep partying. And then Moby was like, we gotta get out of here. This is ridiculous. Like, shut the fuck up, Moby. It's like, it's all meatheads, it's all college meatheads, and this isn't what I'm about. And it's like, dude. And they had a thing. He was pissed off because they didn't put welcome all the artists on a thing. And Buck Cherry was there, and he's like, who's Buck Cherry? I never heard of them. That was their first album. Later. Little did we know they would come up to be one of the biggest douche rock bands. Not gonna lie, I did like the first album, though. Very, very, I like the album. We'll leave it at that. I still listen to the album every now and then. Say what you will about me. Fuck you. It's a good album. I enjoyed the album. Who else was there? There was like five other bands that he named. I was like, yeah, and they wound up becoming big. And it's like, you played the rave movie. Like, come on, dude. Nobody really wanted you there. Fatboy Slim's on there, but I'm not. Now, his album Play did sell a lot of fucking records, so I can kind of see why he's pissed. But, so it's night two, and Limp Bizkit's playing. And then Jonathan Davis came out, and he's defending his boy Fred Durst. He's like, you know, you can blame everybody, man. You can blame... Why are you blaming... You can blame everybody you want, but we can't... Thing. Okay, why are you blaming Fred Durst for this? Why are you blaming the artist? Fred Durst didn't do anything wrong. He said he walked around a little bit, and then he had to leave because it was so bad. He's like, the conditions there were so bad. It was 100 degrees out. The porta potties were overflowing. They pushed them over. Like, people thought they were, like, doing, like, the mud dances that they were doing, but it was actually human shit and piss. People were covered in fecal matter and urine. He's like, they're covered in shit and piss. It's 100 degrees out. You nickel and dimed them for everything. They paid $200 a ticket for you to just not, for 3 days, for you not to let them go home and take a shower or go to a hotel and take a shower or anything like that. And you expect them to, like, you know, not fucking get pissed off about it? That's just human nature. You guys had all these humans in a fucking petri dish and you expected a fucking positive reaction and not a negative reaction? Get the fuck out of here. And then Fred Durst, yeah, you know, it wasn't our fault that they were ripping off the plywood and doing this. And then they went out, hey guys, could you just try to keep the crowd a little? It's just like, dude, we got a playlist. This is what they want us to do. And they had a lot of the fans on the thing. Fred Durst didn't do anything wrong. That's what we came there to see. This is what Fred Durst we wanted to see. That's what we paid to see. And then the final night after this, I kind of fucking don't respect the Chili Peppers for doing this, but the Chili Peppers had this planned for the whole set, so I can't really, like, say it was 100% their fault, but what the fuck was it? So the Chili Peppers just, they took like a 3-year hiatus and they were about to release Californication. And they started rioting. Now, when they started the riot, they found like the food truck and they had like all the pretzels and stuff. They were like lighting fires. And it was like, they were candles. They were giving out candles for the, hey, hold a candle at this certain thing for like a, in solidarity about gun violence or something. Now, it's day 3. At this point, a lot of people just left. They said, fuck this, we are not staying here. My sister's friend was like, yeah, let's go see the Chili Peppers. And Megadeth was playing on the other side. And he's like, nah, I'm going to see fucking Megadeth. I've seen the Chili Peppers before. They're not that good. And I've seen the Chili Peppers myself. And I tend to... I'm inclined to agree. They weren't that good live. Crucify me all you want. Fuck that. Fuck them. And so the Chili Peppers saw all these fires going on, and the mayor of Rome, New York, came up and he said, hey guys, can you do something to try to, like, calm the crowd down? Don't do anything to get them all fired up. They came out to do their encore, and their encore was... Now, at this point, Flea is butt naked with his fucking cock and balls flopping around like a goddamn windsock. Hey guys, should we do it? Should we do it? Yeah, why not? Dun 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 dun. They play Jimi Hendrix Fire when they were fucking lighting shit on fire. And they're like, oh my fucking God, why would you do that? Now, mind you that the fucking Chili Peppers probably had that planned because it was a song that they did in the past and this was a song that they love playing live. And it was the 30th anniversary of Woodstock and Jimi Hendrix was like the big act at Woodstock. One of the big acts at Woodstock. And he played it was just a tribute almost, like the 30th anniversary. Hey, we're going to play Jimi Hendrix cover because he was awesome. But I think fucking, they were just fucking, I don't know, it was just out of control. Like, honestly, and they're like, there was all these, this was just such a bad idea, and then they were just covering it up. I'm like, they were covering it up, and they just said basically there was nothing they could do. They had 10,000 security guards for 500,000 people. The state police had to come in. The fucking city of Rome was in the state of emergency. It was horrible. And they blamed everybody but the fucking venue itself. They blamed everybody. They blamed the bands. They blamed society. They blamed... But the fact of the matter is they didn't blame... The Woodstock fucking people should have gotten blamed. Michael Lang and whoever the other asshole was. They were the ones that should have fronted the blame. Because they... Basically, we're just trying to make money. The city of Rome only made $200,000. That shitty Made in America Fest that Jay-Z has had here every year that I don't even know why they're still doing it. They should just stop it. It's not that fucking lucrative for the city of Philadelphia. It makes them $10 million a year. But, yeah. A bunch of kids that were fresh out of high school or in college, they're working minimum wage jobs at like pizza parlors. I think my sister was working at a fucking perfume store or something. They paid $200 to go into a place that was essentially an internment camp where you had to pay for everything. Everything. There was nothing there that was like, hey, complimentary, here's a thing of water or something. Or we got like a station where you can fill up your water and all that. No. You had to pay $4 for a bottle of water. You had to ration like 6 bottles of water a day. That was $24. That's a lot of money in 1999. And they blamed everybody. They blamed everything and everybody but the fact that it was poorly planned. And then at the end they said, oh, and then Coachella was in India, was around the, and now they gave out a free bottle of water. Coachella, they let you go home. Hey, you want to go spend the night in the hotel? Go ahead. Hey, here's a campground that you can camp out at. You can do this. And now it's like, well, if you have the money, you're allowed to do this now. You don't have to be with the peasants. Like, I'm too old for the music festival bullshit, man. I'm 37 years old. I can't do it anymore. I can't be there for 3 days with all these fucking people for, like, maybe 8 or 9 bands I want to see. Just so people could just get drunk and be like, oh, man, I mean, if you're young, it's good to go just for the experience. To say, hey, man, I went to a 3-day music festival. I went to Bonnaroo. I went to Firefly. I went to Austin City Limits. I went to Lollapalooza. Like, fucking Lollapalooza. Like, I remember when Lollapalooza was a traveling festival. And now it's just in Chicago for 3 days. And they always have a problem. They always crash the gate. And they always do something. It's like... Like, these things are just, they gotta stop. And then I have people, oh, on the festival circuit, there is no such thing as the festival circuit. Do you want to know why every year it's pretty much all the same bands that are on these festivals, it's because it's a fucking booking company in Chicago or Austin, one or the other. There's two of them. They all have the same bands. And this is, hey, if you want to book them for your festival, this is how much they'll cost. They tried Woodstock in 2019. They were going to try to do it again. The lineup was trash. Absolute trash. So I'm waiting. They're like, yeah, they're going to announce the lineup. They're doing Woodstock 2019. The 50th anniversary, they're going to do it at Watkins Glen. I was like, oh, Watkins Glen, the racetrack. It's not bad. That can hold a lot of people. Okay, they thought they can do it with 150,000 people there, but they said no. Well, we can get it down to 70. And they paid all the artists, and this was the fucking biggest thing. You're going to have to overpay for all these artists because they worked with the fucking company that books the festivals, like Lollapalooza, Bonnaroo, and fucking Austin City Limits, and what the fuck is the one in India? Indio, fucking California, just said it, fucking Coachella. So they worked with them, and okay, we're gonna get you some of the hottest artists. Jay-Z, Miley Cyrus, Imagine Dragons, The Killers. Oh, who else was there? The Black Keys. I'm like, and the tickets were $500. And I'm like, who the fuck is going to go see this for $500? There's like, and people fucking were giving me the shit. You're getting old. That's all. I was like, dude, there was no Jay-Z. Jay-Z got paid. He was going to get, if he performed there, he was going to get paid $5 million. Jay-Z is not worth $5 million. If the show got canceled or if it was like moved or whatever and not in their thing, Jay-Z would have still made $2 million. Jay-Z made, he robbed them for $2 million. Miley Cyrus robbed them for $1 million. Who was it? Imagine Dragons. It was something ridiculous. I think they were getting paid like $500,000. Like, dude, they're popular and they got their fans, but they're not worth $500,000. And I think they got $200,000 because for not even having the play. And then I'm looking at it. They asked Santana. Santana said, I'm not doing it because I'm doing something like around where the original Woodstock was. The Who were there. Oh, okay. You're going to get The Who maybe to play a show. They never asked The Who. They said, hey, we would have did it. They never asked us. Who else did they get? The one that they were going to get, they got from all three of them were Country Joe and the Fish. Nobody likes Country Joe and the Fish. Nobody back then liked Country Joe and the Fish. Well, why do you just still like keep bringing them on? And everybody's going to be like, who the fuck is Country Joe and the Fish? Exactly. Like, poorly planned. And this one was even poorlier planned. And it was doomed to fail. They weren't going to let them do it. It was just, and then, fuck. They just weren't going to let them do it. It was, it just was not a good situation. So, in conclusion, Woodstock 99 was a fucking absolute train wreck because of poor planning and greed. And they blamed everything but poor planning and greed because of the woke media. Like, these woke warriors, man, they need to take at least a little Ambien. There's stuff that they really shouldn't. Like, you can't nitpick everything. If you nitpick everything, then you can't enjoy everything. Like, it's not a perfect world. we're getting a lot better, but we're never going to get to where we are right now. It's still going to take a lot of time. Like, seriously, if you look at the elections that happened, like the Republican won in Virginia, and he ran on the thing about critical race theory being taught in schools. We're not going to have it when nobody teaches critical race theory in schools. Like, at this point, they're going to just fucking hammer everybody with this. And it's like, it's only going to get worse before it gets better. And we need to fucking find the root of these problems. That's my thing with that. And after watching the Woodstock 99 documentary, I feel that's the exact thing, that we're never going to get to the root of these problems if we keep it up. Corporate greed. Poor planning. Human nature. Problems that they're pretty much the root of the problem right now. Like I said, I'm trying to buy a house. It's been fucking horrible for me. Every house that I'm trying to buy is like, it just keeps going up and up and up in the price. Like, there's other stuff we have to worry about, man. We can't worry about whether something in 99 happened and, oh, that's probably the reason why a lot of the people are the way they are now. We got the internet now, folks. They're just dicks. Look at your boy Joe Rogan. He's a fucking asshole. Alex Jones. They got a platform now. Just like you have a platform. And now we're going to be in a fucking culture war all over this. But we can't blame Woodstock 99. We can't blame a lot of stuff. We just got to work together and we got to get through this. Sometimes it's black and white and you guys are making it a gray area. And that's all I got to say for this episode. Thank you everybody for listening. Forgot to do the shout out to Sweden. Fucking Sweden is a... Man, you guys love the show. Might have to go out there one time. Ireland. Big up to Ireland. Big fan of OSW Review. Those boys are from Ireland. Oh, another thing before I go. Talking about shit, there's a band called Brass Against. I was thinking where I heard them from, but before I tell you where I heard them from, the lead singer on stage pulled her pants down and absolutely took a piss on this guy. Like, literally pissed a lake on this guy. Like, he was gonna, like, she pissed so much on this guy. Like, I saw the video. Somebody posted the video on Facebook before it got deleted. She pissed so much on this guy. I thought he was getting waterboarded. But I'm thinking, where the hell I've heard about this group, Brass Against. I checked their Spotify. It only had 150 weekly listens or whatever. They're not a big band. I went online. Oh, they're a collective. The only reason I heard of them, speaking of Ireland, was because of OSW Review. They did a cover of Tool's The Pot. And they had a thing with Bob Backlund, how he like dances. He calls him Duck Arse. And the song was very Duck Arsey. So that's, I'm like, that's where I know Brass Against from. Another band trying to get big, but something literally pissed on a guy and waterboarded him with urine. But yeah, shout out to OSW Review, and shout out to Ireland. Thanks for your support. And this is your boy John Albatross signing out. We will be doing more episodes once I find a more permanent place. I'm going to try to set up a studio and everything, and we can do these. All right, peace out, motherfuckers.